A dying missionary grabs the hands of his niece, saying, "My work is not done." And she fulfills his deathbed wish, "Tell my story." I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, Mary Ellen Ziliak shares the story of Father Jerry in her book, Tiny Teak. In his half century of service in India, Father Jerry, who grew up on a farm in Gibson County, introduced modern farming techniques to the poorest of the poor, including the planting of teak trees, a highly valuable wood product. The children's book, Tiny Teak, is now being used as a teaching tool to expose young readers to different cultures and the virtue of service to others. 2 Main Street is next, presented by Jeffrey Berger Kimrin and the Berger Wealth Team at Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. My guest is fulfilling a promise she made to a dying priest, and as Mary Ellen Ziliak recalls, who's going to say no to a missionary on his deathbed? The dying priest was Father Jerome Ziliak, Jerry Ziliak, her husband's uncle. Father Ziliak served as a missionary in India for 50 years and used his farming knowledge growing up in southern Indiana to introduce modern growing techniques among the poorest classes in India. Today, Father Ziliak is considered a pioneer in sustainable development, 40 years before the United Nations coined that term. In his final hours, Father Ziliak, who was 92 when he died, lamented there was more to be done, and he had wanted to write a book about his ministry for those who would follow him. Mary Ellen Ziliak says Father Jerry grabbed her hands and made her promise to tell his story. Well, Mary is now fulfilling that promise in a series of books she's calling The Village Stories. The first book in the series is Tiny Teak, which is now being used as a teaching tool in the Evansville Diocese school system. So, Mary Ellen, welcome back to 2 Main Street. Last year, we were talking about your book, From Acorns to Oaks, celebrating the history of the Westside Nut Club Fall Festival and the Nut Club itself. Now, the motto of the club is From Small Acorns, Large Oaks Grow. This new book, Tiny Teak, is about a small tree anxious to grow tall. Some irony there?
There is irony there, but I've come to believe nothing happens by accident. So I think that irony was just part of the plan of me getting focused on doing the Tiny Teak and other books in that series, because all living things are connected is a theme that's pretty consistent with Father Jerry's work. So talking about a teak tree, it's a strong story that really happened with him in India. So it seemed very fitting that I go from acorn trees to teak trees.
Now, the co-author is Lucy Ziliak. Will?
Yes.
Who is Lucy?
Lucy is a niece, like my husband Roger's a nephew of Father Jerry. Lucy was a niece, and she actually founded a preschool, Kinderhouse, in Hopstott, Indiana. So she was a director and teacher of preschool children. So she's always been supportive of my writings, even before I got started on the Village Stories. And so we collaborated and together wrote Tiny Teak. It was an inspiration for both of us.
It is a children's book.
Yes.
Now, why did Father Jerome Ziliak, Jerry, promote teak tree production?
Well, he stumbled upon this, and actually Tiny Teak is the true story, basically, of what happened. He was walking home to his mission station in Kharpur, India, which is in central India, and he happened to walk by a little sapling tree that was a lone teak tree. So he bent down, took his pocket knife out, and actually dug that little tree out, carried it home in the palm of his hand, and planted it next to a fence row so it wouldn't get stomped upon. And it grew into a full teak tree, and that was the beginning, because he knew agroforestry was something that could be supportive of the outcasts, the untouchables, the poorest of the poor in India. So he thought, oh, maybe we could take some unproductive property on the edges of the fields that were very rocky and plant teakwood forest. So after they matured in 20 years, the Untouchables could reap the benefits of selling that beautiful teak wood. So he started out with one little sapling. By the time he retired, he had over 14,000 teak trees.
Wow. Now, of course, he grew up on a farm in Gibson County.
He did.
So he had this farming knowledge that he took with him to India. Did he want to serve in India?
That's funny. No. There were five different countries at the time when he became a priest with Society of Divine Word, which is only missionary brothers and priests. He said, I'll go anywhere, but he said, I really don't want to go to India. Why? I don't know, but he laughed. He said, well, he learned his lesson. Don't say this is not where I want to go because the superior sent him there. And he said, it's the best thing that ever happened to him. But no, he did not want to go to India. There were five choices, not that he had a choice, but he was just assigned there and learned to love it.
Did he have a particular place he wanted to go?
No, he didn't. He just didn't. I think the heat kind of deterred him because it's very, very hot in India. It goes above 100 degrees easily during the arid dry season. And he just thought, no, I'll go someplace else. Well, no.
Now, Kharpur is a small Kharpur. Village.
It is, yes.
Right. And it's in what section of India?
It is in central India. He started out in Jabwa, which is more where the Aboriginal people lived, more jungle area. And he spent 10 years in Jabwa and then eventually was transferred to Kharpur, which was more a small town close to Khandwa. And I compare Khandwa as a city similar to the size of Evansville, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up in Hopstad, a little town. Well, Kharpur was similar to being on the outskirts in a much smaller village.
Sure. Is it the reason that it was an outskirts of a bigger town because these were Untouchables and that's where they could live?
Yes. They were very segregated. There was a strict caste system, which by 1950 was supposed to be legally abolished. But even today, you can find remnants of that caste system still. Mm-hmm. And the Untouchables are called the Dalits, the outcasts. Those were the lowest. And so they congregated together in an area, and Kharpur was almost 100% outcast.
Really? Now, he also helped build schools and health clinics for this poor class. The tribals, the indigenous people of India, the Dalits, of course, the lowest rung, I guess, in the caste system ladder. And I researched that there are some 700 ethnic groups recognized as tribes in India. That's about 100 million people, many regarded as forest dwellers.
Yes.
The Dalits, referred to as the Untouchables, they had cleaning jobs. They scavenged. They work in kilns, leather crafting. And a stigma followed them from birth to death.
Yes, because with the caste system at the time, a person was born into it. You couldn't go up or down. You had to be born into that. So it was not a choice, regardless of what you chose to do in your lifetime. But an outcast was segregated as people who really had what they called dirty jobs. They handled carcasses, human waste. They cleaned ditches. They took care of the dead. It was whatever someone didn't want to do, the outcast did. I mean, they didn't even hold the status of a dog. A dog as a pet in the family could sit under the table, receive scraps from the table. A Dalit was not allowed to be in the same room when that person of higher caste ate.
Oh, my.
So it was literally less rights than a dog would have as a pet.
Now, the caste system, like you said, was officially banned by law, but still practiced in many parts of India. There are some 3,000 castes, and I found this very interesting, 25,000 subcastes based on occupations.
Yes. It's a complex system, and when Father Jerry was over there, he went to India in 48, so he was there 50 years. But at the time he was serving there were 60 million outcasts at that time. And many different subsets, much like the language, is Hindi is what they would speak. but there are dialects similar to what we hear around the southwestern Indiana area with German dialects, just a little different. So Hindi was a very complex language to pick up, but he learned it after a while. He said he could never say he picked it up quickly, but he managed.
Okay. Now, you have another book in the series, Touching the Untouchables,
yes,
where you really go into the caste system.
Yes, that is the next book coming out. There are four books in the Village Stories series, the first one being Tiny Teak, the children's book, and it teaches patience and self-esteem. And the Tiny Teak Tree is the main character. His grandmother is Nani, which is Hindi for grandmother in India. So she teaches him patience and self-esteem. The next book is more the historical narrative of Father Jerry Ziliak. It tells his life story. So it will be more of a biography type of book, but it will still serve as a novel.
Oh.
But it's based upon his true life story. So that will be coming out later this year. The next book is another children's book called Dung Diddy Doodoo. And as you might guess, it's about dung. Father Jerry actually built a dung digester where he took cow manure, mixed it with water, and the sludge gave off a methane gas that he trapped under a dome he built, a metal dome. And as it compressed that gas, he would pipe it into the village huts, and they'd use it for cooking fuel or for lighting because they had no electricity till the very end of his stay.
Mm, wow. Now, Tiny Teak, tell me about the cover of the book.
Oh, well, I was really blessed that Joan Dawig DeYoung was our illustrator, and people might know her from this area especially. USI, she and John McNaughton designed the Screaming Eagle that's on USI's campus. So we were so privileged to have Joan come out of retirement and do the Tiny Teak design. She took the time to, even on the front cover, the colors are the color of the Indian flag. So what you see, this bright orange and the green and the blues are part of the flag. Everything is appropriate to the setting, indigenous to India. Even like the panther we have as a character, his coat is a very subtle polka dot underneath, almost like a leopard, but you have to look closely. That is an indigenous panther to the area. The butterfly is the oak leaf butterfly. And she went into detail with that. It's their state butterfly. When it puts its wings together, it looks like a dried up oak leaf.
Wow.
Again, my trees keep overlapping.
They do.
But yes, even to the point where there's a little globe map type thing when Father Jerry's story is told. And she called me one day and said, tell me which path Father Jerry took from the U.S. to India. Was it the northern or the southern route?
Mm-hmm.
He took the northern route. So when a child looks at this, they're accurately seeing the path he took in 1948. So she went to great length making this very accurate and just authentic to India.
Well, it's a beautiful book, definitely.
My guest
is Mary Ellen Ziliak, author of Tiny Teak, the first in her Village Stories series, fulfilling a deathbed promise to her uncle by marriage, Father Jerome Ziliak, Jerry, who wanted her to tell his story of service and compassion among the poor in India. So what's been reaction to the book among those back in India? Have they had copies of it?
Well, we are just now starting distribution, limitedly right now. But as fate would have it, when the book came out and the media director out of Society of Divine Word from Chicago did an interview with me, and it was a globally publicized release, and I had people send me email from India. So I've been in communication faster than I anticipated, and one is a missionary that I'm in touch with. He reached out from Indore, which is where their headquarters is for Central India for Divine Word Seminary. And he wants to utilize the lesson plans we use here in Evansville Diocese, having Tiny Teak as a teaching tool. He wants us to do the same thing with his age second graders in India. So we're coordinating that, trying to adapt what we're using here to what he's using. And then I also have a gentleman who reached out named Sundar, and he grew up in the village where Father Jerry worked. So I am just amazed that we are now speaking, and his dad worked with Father Jerry closely. So it's amazing how things happen.
Sure. So it'll be translated into Hindi?
Well, right now, Father Dominic said he feels we're better off leaving it in English. English is a strong second language in India. So right now, they feel it would be more consistent because there's only one dialect of the English.
Sure.
So it'd be simpler to keep it in English. Right now, that's the plan. So there's a couple of books over there now. More to come.
Okay. Now, coming up, we're going to talk about the other books in the works, including the great title, Dung Diddy Doo Doo. A recent announcement also from the Indiana Arts Commission, that's very exciting, which expands the connection between the Catholic students here at home and those in the, is it Khandwa Diocese?
Khandwa Diocese, yes.
In India.
Madhya Pradesh.
So a lot to talk about. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back with Mary Ellen Ziliak. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Mary Ellen Ziliak. Her latest book is Tiny Teak, A Children's Tale, which is a tribute to Father Jerome Jerry Ziliak, who spent a half century serving the poor in India. Tiny Teak tells the story of a tiny tree hoping one day to become tall and strong like Nanny. We talked about Nanny. Tiny Teak learns a lesson to be patient. You are part of something bigger and better. Now, the teak tree, very interesting. The wood is very desirable. And so, again, how long does it take from a seedling to grow up to become a mature tree and harvested?
Well, you have to be patient. They don't grow quickly. But in about 20 years, they're close to maturity. So it's a long-term investment, and that's what Father had planned. But the teak wood is just beautiful. And at one time with building ships, teak wood was the first choice to build ships because it's a very durable, strong wood. It resists termites, and water does not damage it. It's impermeable. It grows in a lot of different types of soil, but you have to kind of play with the climate sensitivity. But one nice thing, Father realized goats and cattle don't eat the leaves on the teak trees. So he could take the edges of crop fields where he was doing hybridization to maximize production around the monsoon rains and the arid temperatures. And he took that rocky soil, cleared it, and put teak trees there. So it was unused soil that they kind of refurbished and made it productive. So then the wood would be sold, and it could put food on the table for the untouchables.
That's part of that sustainable development.
Yes, sustainable. He believed, yes, all living things are connected. He believed you take care of Mother Earth the same way you take care of each other. So to him, all living things were connected. So he had a great reverence and respect for anything that was alive as a tree, a plant, the earth. It was all important to him.
Now, in the book, there's a photo of Father Ziliak with Mother Teresa.
Oh, yeah.
What do you know about that meeting between the two?
I've been searching to find the exact moment they met, and I haven't verified it yet. I have a plethora of notes, journals, scraps of paper that he kept over his lifetime. I'm still sifting through that. One mention was a Thursday that very casually, Father mentioned in his planner that Mother Teresa was stopping by Thursday to talk about her new place for the girls, which ended up being her new facility in Khandwa. So it was a few miles from there, but not far at all. It was still in the same district. So I do know they met either late 80s or early 90s because we have documentation of that. But I can't verify the first meeting.
Now, she was based in Calcutta.
Yes.
And she was definitely serving the poor.
Yes. She very much was on the East Coast starting out on the shoreline of Calcutta. Father Jerry was in central India, but she started branching out after several decades in Calcutta and started a new unit of support in Kandwa.
It's interesting that she was from Albania. I think that's where she grew up.
Macedonia, Albania
area.
And they actually both came to India about the same time.
Really?
It was interesting. Mm-hmm. She went to the East Coast. He went to the central area. But they compared what they were doing. They felt like they were both addressing the poor, but they had two different avenues that presented itself. Mother Teresa more took care of those who had some oddity get thrown their way, like an amputation of a limb or a disease that developed, leprosy.
Was she a nurse?
No, she wasn't, but she cared for the poor. She wasn't a true nurse, but she did care for the poor. And so she was taking care of what life dealt this person individually that maybe made them homeless and poor and could not care for themselves properly. Father Jerry took care more of those who just by virtue of where and to whom they were born defined their caste system. So they were deprived of knowledge and schooling that would normally send someone on a life path that might support them better.
Mm-hmm.
So they felt like together they covered the majority of the poor, and they tried to join forces to figure out what overlaps between the two, which is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I love seeing notes on that.
Now, you mentioned a cultural consultant for your book.
Bhumika Modi, is a friend of our family, has been for a long time. And when she knew I was doing the book, she offered to help us with it. So she made sure I didn't do something, say something, or print something that stuck my foot in my mouth as far as the Indian culture. So she was a wonderful source. She helped guide me with the most basic things of Hindu versus Hindi. So she was just invaluable.
Okay. Now, Father Jerry served in Kharpur in the Kawanda
Diocese,
Kharpur Village, Bangalore District, and the language there is Hindi?
Yes, Hindi is the primary language, but like I said, different dialects.
Sure, okay. You describe Father Jerry in the book as a wise and gentle man who smiles a lot, mm-hmm. wears jeans, a red plaid shirt, and a big safari hat on his head. That was his uniform?
It pretty much so. I don't know how that evolved, but the heat was so intense. And he shared with us early on that they had garbs. Their priestly garbs were white instead of black that we're normally seeing mm-hmm. here in this area. But it was to reflect the sun away. The black was just too hot.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a farm boy. He grew up Hopsot. They had a dairy and grain farm. He wore jeans every day of his life growing up. I think he was just partial to red because a lot of the pictures have him in a red plaid shirt and the safari hat. And that's how you'd normally see him unless he was saying mass or some kind of special thing. I love the picture of Mother Teresa on the back of the book. He's got his red plaid shirt on, but it's a good pair of jeans. They're not very worn.
Yeah, he did have to perform his priestly duties, too, besides being out in the fields.
Yes, he did. So if he had mass, he would wear the vestments that we're used to seeing. But he tried to adapt his vestments to be more supportive of the culture he was in the middle of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of what the Divine Word does. They try to communicate the brotherhood and the sisterhood among cultures. They try to start a dialogue in that setting. And that's why Father Jerry said, yes, he was a priest, a missionary. He wanted to bring God to people. But he said, you can't talk to a person about God if their belly's growling. So he first and foremost stood alongside the villagers to support what they needed to put food on the table and to have a decent life.
Of course, India is such a complex country. So many cultures there, religions, languages. And so, he had to sort through all of that.
Oh, he did. And Actually, he became a priest in 47. He was assigned to India, but he and another missionary, a friend, Father Felix, two of them went to each country. There were 10 graduates at that time from his school.
Where did he go to school? Priest.
He went to Techney, Illinois, which is just outside Chicago.
That's most Northbrook area?
Yeah, Northbrook area. So mm-hmm. It's a few hours from here. But the first year, he spent there in the Chicago area to get acclimated. He was trying to learn Hindi, which was a tough language. He was trying to learn the different traditions so he could be respectful and supportive going into a new environment. So he spent the first year of his 50 in Techney, Chicago area. Then he went on to Kharpur and Jabwa in 48.
So he spent 50 years in India.
Yes.
So how often did he come back to home to Southern Indiana?
Not often. He got on the bus when he was 13 years old and went to Techney, which, like we said, is by Chicago. And he never again lived in his home any length of time. He did not come back and live there. He was supposed to be able to visit every 5 years or so. He went in 48. His first home leave was 58. So he had to wait 10 years before he saw any of his family again. But he was home a total of 7 times in 50 years.
Was that unusual for a young boy like that to be sent away at that young age?
Well, that missionary, you know, Society of Divine Word is the largest Catholic missionary group in the world. And their founder was Saint Arnold Jansen. And actually, his feast day is today, which I love the irony of that also. He founded the organization, but they founded it with the idea of being international. So that's what they trained their students to do. They were there to take whatever they could with them where their talents lay. That's what they tried to focus on. Father Jerry, yes, he grew up, and at 13, he was up there, but he continued to have input and influence in agricultural settings because he came from that strong background.
Well, what motivated him to join the priesthood?
There was a priest that he at St. James where he was going to school and attended church. And
that's in Hopstot?
In Hopstot, Indiana. And at the age of 9, he told his parents, I'm going to be a priest. It's very unusual, I think, to have someone committed so early. But then before he made a decision of where to attend seminary, that priest said, you know, they need young men and women to be missionaries across the world. Have you ever thought of that? Never had he thought of it, but it came from his mentor, Father Haskamp was his name. So when he did that, that intrigued him. He liked the adventure of it. And from that point on, then he decided to be an international missionary, and this was the place to go for that.
Were there any other clergy members in his family?
No, there were no close clergy members at all in the family. And it was difficult. He talks about how his mom and dad had a very difficult time sending him there. They'd had a drought a couple of years before he left for school. And his mom and dad, his mother died when he was fairly young, and his dad could not afford to send him. They had 9 children.
Wow.
And 5 boys and 4 girls, and his dad did not know how he'd send him to seminary. A benefactor from the community stepped forward and paid for him to attend. He did not come home once that first year because there was no money to bring him back. There was just money to support on-site seminary school.
He grew up fast.
He grew up very fast. He grew up experiencing a world that his family never did just by virtue of being in the Chicago area, and then he was in Wisconsin for a bit. So he learned how to play hockey. He was very sports-oriented, you know, and his dad didn't even know what a puck was, and he was playing hockey. So it was a different world from Little Hopstot, Indiana.
Right. Now, you mentioned you were with Father Jerry on his deathbed, mm-hmm. where he grabbed your hands and made you promise to tell his story. Can you set that scene for us? Where and when was that?
This was in July of 2012, so it was some time ago. And it's taken me some time to discern exactly what it is I'm supposed to do with all this. But so it was July of 2012. I went to Techne, where Father was retired, outside Chicago, and there were five family members. I was one of five. Roger's mom, a sister, her fiancé.
Now, who's Roger?
Roger's my husband.
Okay.
So he grew up knowing Father Jerry. I had known Father Jerry from the time we dated on. But we went up there with the intent of helping Father Jerry sort through his meager belongings. You know, the missionaries would take a vow of poverty, so there was little to go through. But it was a matter of, okay, who do you want to have this book? It was the nitty-gritty of dying for a man who had no spouse or children. So my mother-in-law, his sister-in-law, kind of led the pack, and we went up there to visit him, knowing he was debilitated, but he was still very sharp. So me being a married into the family member, I thought, I need to back off, let the blood relatives move forward with this conversation. But I ended up having the best job in the house because I hung out with Father Jerry. He knew I had my book coming out that year, my first book. And so he was asking me how things were going, and I think that got him started thinking about the book he had never written and wanted to do. So I saw him getting very agitated, and I'm a nurse from my background is nursing, and I tried all my nursing tricks to try to calm him down. Nothing calmed him down. And I said, what has got you so upset? And he said, my work's not done. And I said, you're 92. You spent 50 years living in India in the poorest conditions. What do you still have to do? And he said, I don't have it all written down. To him, there was value in writing down what he did to help the next person behind him. So when he said that, I instinctively, without thinking really, I said, don't worry, Father Jerry, I'll write it down for you. And it's almost like you flipped a switch. He calmed. That's when he grabbed my hands and got right in my face. And he said, you promised me. I said, yes, I promise I'll write it all down. He was calm, jovial the rest of the time, no concern. And looking back, it was significant for him. I just much later realized the significance of him handing me that task that he could go. 2 days later, he died.
Really?
So I know it was no accident that I was there at his bedside at that time, but it's taken me several tries to discern what it is I was supposed to do. And so I very much spiritually rely on his guidance still as to aim me in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Because this was daunting. I told my husband on the way home, I said, I think I promised Father Jerry I would write his panther story, which he had an interesting story. And when he was in Jabwa in the jungles, he helped with a panther that had killed five of the village children. He had one of the only guns in the whole area. He was new to the place. And so the tribals approached him and said, would you help us get this panther? So he actually shot the panther, put an end to the killings from that panther that was on a venture. And he gained respect from them at that time because they then accepted him as part of the community. But I thought I was writing about that, and my husband Roger said, oh, no, honey, you agreed to write the whole thing. And I knew I did. I was just in denial.
Well, that panther story is incredible.
He had a lot of interesting stories, but putting one little story together and then one book grew into four books, and much, much more.
Well, you've got my interest here about the panther story, because we hear these stories about India still today, that tigers will kill children that wander away from the village.
Yes.
I mean, it's frightening.
It's just natural prey.
Sure.
You know, that's their instinct. And once it starts, it sounded like it was not unusual to have one killing lead to another one right behind
it.
So five children.
Oh, that's amazing.
I cannot imagine what that was like, but it went a long way.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Mary Ellen Ziliak, who is co-author of Tiny Teak, a children's book about the life of Father Jerome Jerry Ziliak, who grew up on a farm in Gibson County and served as a priest and missionary in India for 50 years. He is remembered as a pioneer in now what's known as sustainable development, teaching modern farming techniques to the poorest of the poor in India. Well, coming up, a look ahead to those other books in the Village Stories series, including Touching the Untouchables, Silky Sorry, and Dung Diddy Doo-Doo. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Mary Ellen Ziliak, the author of Tiny Teak, a children's book about the missionary work of the late Father Jerome Jerry Ziliak, who spent a half century serving the poorest of the poor in India. Father Ziliak is Mary's uncle by marriage. The co-author of the book is another Ziliak, Lucy Ziliak Will. Tiny Teak, a teaching tool now in the Evansville Catholic Diocese school system. Lesson plans include vocations, agroforestry, the caste system of India, and the steps to sainthood. So what are the children's reactions to this book?
The children are just so open and welcoming. That they love hearing about the jungle because it sounds exciting. And Tiny Teak takes place in the jungle. So you've got the panther in there. You've got other critters. You've got adventure, but you've also got lush growth of a lot of plants. So the kids, you know, they're so visual that our illustrator Joan DeYoung did such a good job illustrating accurately what that setting was like, 75 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids jump all over it, and they grasp very quickly what the message is behind it. So it's been a good response, and I love teaching some of these classes that I've been able to with the lesson plans. It's a grade 2 level, so they're wonderful. They're like little sponges.
Oh, I bet. Now, you have received a grant fellowship from the Indiana Arts Commission. Tell me about that.
Oh, I was very honored to receive a grant from the Indiana Arts Commission. I had attended an intensive class for creatives in Terre Haute last spring. And out of it, we were given the opportunity and assistance to write a grant proposal. Well, I was surprised that I was encouraged to do the grant that was closest to me around supporting the outreach of Tiny Teak with teaching tools for grade 2 classrooms. So the 4 lesson plans that we've developed are because we got the grant monies from the Indiana Arts Commission. So I am so pleased that the state of Indiana saw fit to give me monies to communicate not only with our community, but to start a conversation with India to connect our kids here to the kids there. It's all the same as far as teaching them basics in life.
Now, vocations, agroforestry, the caste system, and the steps to sainthood. Could you talk about those?
Well, we have them all together in a little folder, and it's truly a teaching plan that the teachers use. We had an area teacher who has worked in the system for over 30 years. And so it's a teacher's lesson plan that's been approved and was we got assistance from the Evansville Diocese through the leaders in that. So it's when they utilize it, when they see fit. In November, there was a celebration of Vocations Day. So Lucy Ziliak Will and I together visited half a dozen of the area schools and helped teach the lesson plan on vocations. So the teacher, they take Tiny Teak, they read the story, they talk about Father Jerry, and incorporate it in the lesson plans because it's all from the story, Tiny Teak.
Mm-hmm.
So they make it real. They make the whole idea like vocation, okay, that is something that can be planted into a child at an early age. Father Jerry knew at 9 he wanted to be a priest. That conversation can start with any family at any time. And our message that we tried to relay when teaching the vocations lesson plan was Father Jerry was a little boy from a dairy farm in Hopstock, just down the road. He went to school, he became a priest, he became a missionary, and did things across the world that sound so big and unreachable. We want to let those children know they can get the same inspiration and do the exact same thing. Everybody has such potential and everyone's different. So we open the door for that conversation and we let the family know, the parents then know what we taught. Mm-hmm. And they have the conversation, what do you want to become? If that conversation leads to possibility of a missionary, we want them to feel comfortable with it, and the kids do.
Mm-hmm. So steps it opens the door. Steps to sainthood. I'm thinking about St. Jerry here.
Well, yes, and that conversation's happened. And let's just say the discussion continues and steps are being taken.
What are the steps to sainthood?
Oh, you would have to ask me that. I'd have to look at my lesson plans. They go through different levels. It's like they become venerated and blessed. And then the last level is actually sainthood.
Does it go to the Pope then eventually?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And I did find out you approach the leader in the church in the community the priest died in.
Okay.
So although Father Jerry was from the Evansville diocese, mm-hmm. he died in the Chicago diocese.
Okay.
So that conversation happens mm-hmm. at that point.
Wow. These village stories, they each have a general theme, I guess, of family,
they do.
Love, and support of your neighbor.
Yes.
And you kind of keep that thread going?
We do. It just varies, and we will have characters that some overlap from book to book. So even though they are standalone children's books, they can be used as a set because the child will probably recognize, oh, that panther was in that story.
Okay.
So they have recognition, and it makes it more cohesive that they can build upon each other. But yes, each children's book has to have a basic teaching theme, and patience and self-esteem is what we concentrated on with Tiny Teak, but they're all around family and love of community and respecting nature.
Now, we talked about the Diddy Do book. Who's Silky Sorry?
Silky Sorry is actually the story of a little girl who helps her mother out after she gives birth to her baby brother. She's not able to help in the fields in India, in Kharpur, where she was. And the women often planted the crops. That was kind of a woman's duty. And she'd take the children out to the field with her. And when her mom could not continue that for a short time because of giving birth, this little girl is able to fill in for her mom and take her place, so she feels the esteem of being one of the community to help support the family. Mm-hmm. So it's support a family.
Now, in your commitment, I guess, to tell Father Jerry's story, he did relate some episodes, of course, of his long service in India. And he would make these sick calls. Can you tell me about that first sick call that he made?
Well, Father Jerry did a good job of journaling. So I came across one of his letters back home early in his time in Jabwa. The first 10 years was in the jungle with the Aboriginal tribe. And he writes about the first one. He was very daunted because the village was almost completely wiped out where he was because of cholera. And there were three families remaining in one of the outposts that he visited. He had four outposts in the Jabwa area. And so he was scared. It's like, what am I going to offer to this family who's dying? They were left behind because they also dealt with cholera. So he had to face that humanness of him going into a little hut. And living in the jungle at that time, it was late 40s, early 50s when he was there, he said the hut was actually built with an eave, like we think of a peak with an eave, but he said that started at 3 feet off the ground. So Father Jerry was a 6'4 big man, he had to literally get on all fours to enter the hut, the building. But they very much lived with whatever livestock they had. So he was trying to say the prayer of the dying, the last rites. And he's reading out of his book. There's a billy goat behind him, butting him in the back. There's another goat up front trying to eat the pages out of his Bible. And he said, you've got the stench of cholera with all human waste and every smell imaginable in this little hut with a fire going, because that's all they had. So he said, it's a very physically traumatic experience. Even though he took a lot of instructions on how to handle that, he said he was not prepared for the trauma of making a visit. And he always liked to say he never got laid up or laid out in the 50 years. He said, I never missed a day of work.
Wow.
So he went into each setting with that mindset that God will take care of me if I'm supposed to do this. So he did that with his first sick visit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family passed away, but he was able to make that visit, and it was very encouraging for him that, yes, he was able to pull on whatever he needed to get through that first visit. Yeah.
Now, in fulfilling your promise to Father Jerry, writing these books, The Village Stories, you say, I want to put into children's minds at an early age that they should live with respect and honor, that God has a plan for you.
Yes, and that's very important to Father. He felt every individual has a unique offering, and they have to just be open to whatever it is they receive as guidance. And we have to make that okay. So we try to do that with everything we write and our presentations we do around this, what has become for us kind of our own little mission to keep his story going.
And that was the advice given to Tiny Teak from the grown tree, Nani.
Yes, yes. Nani, the whole thing with the story is Tiny Teak, the little guy on the front of the cover, thinks he'll never grow big. You know how kids are impatient. I'll never get big. I'll be a little squirt forever. And Nani, the grown, wise grandma, is saying, don't worry. You know, you are special. It's time I tell you about your story of how you came to be. And she relays then the story of Father Jerry finding the little sapling on the side. And what a proud purpose they have as teak trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, after Lucy and I had written this book, I came across Father Jerry making mention of a dream he had of the teak wood trees on the rocky hill. He called it Stone Hill, where he planted some of the early forestry plants. And he said, in the dream, the trees are talking to each other and saying how great it is to be out in the sunshine and grow on this hill. And this was after we'd already written this book. So we've had a lot of, they're not really coincidences. I don't know what you'd call them, God incidences. Depends on where your reference point
is. You think Father Jerry's on your shoulder sometimes.
I have no doubt.
Looking over your shoulder.
He wakes me up, and I laugh about this because he was a man that got things done. Whatever needed done, he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But he wakes me up sometimes between 3:30 and 4:30 in the morning, gives me these crazy ideas, and I write it down because I know I'm supposed to do something with it. It just happens.
So you think he's pleased?
I hope so. I hope he is. I'm feeling that things are happening that reinforce. Yeah, I think I'm doing what he wanted me to do.
Mary Ellen Ziliak, congratulations on the latest book, Tiny Teak. And
thanks
again for sharing the story of a remarkable man, Father Jerry. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Both Father Ziliak and Mother Teresa, who are shown together in a photograph in Mary Ellen Ziliak's book, spent most of their missionary careers in India. Mother Teresa arrived in India in 1928, 20 years before Father Ziliak. Like Father Jerry, Mother Teresa was a teenager when she answered her call to become a missionary. She was born in Macedonia, left home for Ireland to learn English, and joined the Sisters of Loreto. She took the name of the patron saint of missionaries, but chose the Spanish spelling of Teresa. She started teaching in Darjeeling, but moved to Calcutta to begin a ministry to the poor, disabled, and sick. Mother Teresa started the Missionaries of Charity in 1950, creating an open-air school, a hospice, medical centers, and a leper colony. After leaving India, Mother Teresa opened a Missionaries of Charity Center in New York, worked with Muslims and Christians in Lebanon, and in 1985 opened Gift of Love Houses for those suffering from HIV and AIDS in the U.S., Australia, the Middle East, and Croatia. She received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979, and 2 years after her death in 1997, Pope John Paul II opened the cause of canonization. The Church officially declared Mother Teresa Saint Teresa of Calcutta in 2016. Two miracles of healing led to Mother Teresa becoming a saint. Under Vatican law, the first miracle means beatification. A second allows for canonization. The first confirmed miracle was in 1998, 1 year after Mother Teresa's death. A woman too weak to undergo an operation to remove a growth in her abdomen was praying in the Missionaries of Charity Chapel in West Bengal, India, when she saw a light emanating from a photo of Mother Teresa. Later, a medallion that had touched Mother Teresa's body was placed on the woman's abdomen, and the next day the mass was no longer there, and doctors agreed she no longer needed surgery. The second miracle was in 2008, when a Brazilian man with a brain infection fell into a coma, and his wife prayed to Mother Teresa. She then put a relic from Mother Teresa, given to her by the priest who married the couple, to her husband's head. Later, when her husband was taken to surgery to save his life, he suddenly woke up. The abscesses and fluid in his brain had disappeared. Tiny Teak, inspired by the life of Father Jerry Ziliak and written by Mary Ellen Ziliak and Lucy Ziliak Will, is published by Evansville-based MT Publishing Incorporated. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. 2 Main Street airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. Previous shows are on demand at WNIN.org.